Hey, so yes, we are in our Treasure Hunter series, talking about biblical view of finances and money. And today, of course, talking about being generous. And I want to ask the question first off, do you want to be generous? I'm assuming all of us would raise a hand and say, yes, I want to be generous. I don't think anyone here would want to say, yes, I really hope I'm stingy. I think all of us want to be generous. The second follow-up question would be, would you call yourself generous? That might be a separate question. Would you call yourself a generous person? I, again, think probably most of us would say yes. I think most of us would not want to say, I don't see myself as a generous person. Most say, yes, I'm a generous person. Well, to help us get a sense of what it looks like to be a generous person, I want us to take a look and talk about Bill Gates. Mr. Bill Gates right here in our own backyard in Redmond in Seattle. A little bit about him and his generosity and his wealth. So Bill Gates, if you didn't know, is worth $105 billion. That's billion with a B, if you didn't hear me right. $105 billion is his net worth. Is that just unbelievable or what? I don't even think you can get your mind around that big of a number. Well, maybe to help you think about that, I want to just kind of break that down into some specific practical things that will help you realize how much money that is, all right? If Gates spent $1 million a day, it would take him 285 years to spend his fortune. Now, some of us might say, I'd love to have that problem. I would love to have that challenge of spending $1 million a day for 285 years. In the context of his age, so Bill Gates is 63 years old. If he didn't have 285 years, of course, which he doesn't, if he only had 27 years left, let's say he lives to age 90, which would be a reasonable lifespan, so he's got 27 years left, he would have to spend $10.6 million a day to get rid of his money. $10 million a day to get rid of it. If you can imagine, again, I think a lot of us would welcome that opportunity to try and prove that. If Bill Gates makes about 6% on his net worth, which is about what he makes, depending on his investments, he makes in one day, $32 million. In one day. That means he makes $1.34 million per hour, and he makes $22,800 per minute. Per minute, he brings in $22,000, if you can even believe that, right? If he was sitting in our service today, which would be about an hour and a half, he would make close to $2 million just sitting here. Here's another one. Bill Gates could give every single person in the world $10, every person on the planet $10, and he still would have $30 billion left over. Here's another one. This helps too. The average American spending $1 is comparable to Gates spending just over $1 million. So $1 to you and I is equivalent to Bill Gates spending $1 million, if you can believe that. And the last is this. Bill Gates' net worth is greater than the GDP, the gross domestic product, the total of the goods and services produced by a country, is greater than Croatia, Cambodia, and the Bahamas combined. The GDP of three countries himself, he exceeds it in his net worth. He is unbelievably rich. But also get this, he's incredibly generous too. Bill Gates gives away, or has given away so far in his life, $36 billion. It's actually about 34% of his wealth he has given away. He is unbelievably wealthy. He has given it mostly away to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, different charities across the country, and he's incredibly generous. And in a worldly way, what he does possess and what he does give is just astonishing. But the astonishing thing is when you stack Bill Gates up next to God, he looks like a beggar. He looks like a pauper. And when you put Bill Gates' generosity, which his generosity would exceed our church's generosity as a total, I think probably forever, that we would accumulate $36 billion in giving, he exceeds that far beyond that. But when you stack his generosity up against God's generosity, Bill Gates looks stingy. Bill Gates looks like a hoarder, actually, when you stack him up next to the generosity of God, because everything he has, everything he owns, even his own life, God gave him. God gave him the whole entire thing. Colossians 1:16 says this, "For by him, Jesus, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him." That means that everything I have, everything I own, every ounce of my life, the breath that is heaving my chest in and out right now is a gift from God. It's God's generosity. In fact, when you go home today after the service this morning and you either eat lunch at your house or you go out to lunch with someone else and you take that first bite of food and you taste it in your mouth and all the taste buds in your mouth experience that taste, guess what? You're experiencing the generosity of God. God didn't owe you taste buds. God was not obligated to give you taste. He, in his generosity, said, "I will put taste buds in that mouth, and when you taste food, you will taste it as an example of my generosity." That's how good I am to you. And we talk about generosity, we've got to start with God. I loved how Christian and Carl, they talked about their generosity, brought it back to you because God's been generous to us. God's been generous to us. And this is important because the motivation for being generous, I want to talk about today, is not because it's a good thing to do, not because I have extra money. It's not because it makes me feel good or gives me the thing I want to do or ought to do, but it's a response in how generous God has been to me. That's why I give, is because God has been so generous to me. The more I know of the generosity of God, the more generous I will be. It's kind of like an actor or actress who's preparing for a part and they want to take on that part as much as they possibly can. And so they meet with someone who can help them do that. Natalie Portman in The Black Swan, if you ever saw that movie, it was released in 2010. And in that movie, in order to prepare for her job as a ballerina, she met with a New York City ballet dancer, Mary Helen Bowers, which is a famous dancer. And she met with her for up to 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, for over a year to prepare for the film. 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, over a year to prepare for the film. Why? So that she could be exactly like her. She didn't want a prop person to do the dancing. She wanted to do it herself. So she knew, I've got to get with this person and I've got to be just like them in order to do this. And it's the same with God. We've got to be just like God and spend time with God to be as generous as God. Here's the big idea. You become generous not by trying to give money away, but by getting to know a generous God. You become generous not by giving money away, but by getting to know a generous God. It's kind of like a reverse black hole in a sense, I think. A black hole is a region of space where the gravitational pull is so intense that it pulls everything into it, including light. And God is the opposite with his generosity. He doesn't suck us in, or we're not sucked into ourselves and our selfishness and our comfort, but God in his generosity pulls us out of ourselves. So we might become more like him. We might become generous people. He pulls us out of the orbits of our own lives, the solar systems of our own living. So what I want to look at today is aspects of the generosity of God and how you see it in different people's lives in the Bible. And how they experience God's generosity and they're able to be generous themselves. And so to understand this first, I want to talk about the self-sufficiency of God. The self-sufficiency of God. Maybe you've watched a Home Depot commercial, and they try and really encourage you that you can do anything, right? Their slogan at the end is, "You can do it, we can help," right? That's the Home Depot slogan. And they certainly have convinced me, because as someone who my wife would attest is awful at home improvements, I am the worst when it comes to home improvement. In fact, when we moved into our new house over here back in April, my wife said, "You know, there's different racks in the bathroom, like the towel racks and the rack next to the sink, and then there's the one you put on the back of the door to hang a towel, you know?" And she said, "Can you put those up?" And I said, "Well, it's going to be iffy, but I'll go ahead and try." And so I went in there, and I tried to put the towel rack on the wall over there. One, I measured wrong and got the height wrong. So I had already drilled two holes in the wall, went, it was the wrong thing. Then I thought I got it right again, drilled again, got the wrong thing. And my wife comes up, and there's like all these holes in the wall. And she's like, "What happened?" And I was like, "I just tried to put the stupid towel rack up." And she's like, "John, I think you might have to call somebody." And I was like, this is embarrassing. I can't even get a towel rack up. And she's like, well, just try and put the towel thing on the back of the door. You know that little hook you put in the back of the door, you can hang a towel on there? The small little metal hook. So I said, that sounds pretty simple. If I can't do that, I'm a total idiot. And so I said, I'll do that. So I got the level. I made sure it was level, you know, on the back of the door. Saw where the screws are. Got it all lined up. And so I drilled the two screws in. And I step back and I'm like, nailed it. Totally nailed it. It's perfect. And so I go and I open the door. And as I open the door, I look on the other side and the two screws are sticking out. And I was like, yeah, forgot to measure the width of the door. And so I had way too long of screws. And my wife comes up and she didn't have any words to say. You don't want me coming over helping you with a house project. You don't want that. You can do it. We can help. You know, that theology is somewhat dangerous because it makes sense when you're at Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. It's dangerous when you apply it to the church. You can do it and God can help, because that's not good theology, because we must start at the place to be reminded every day, God doesn't need you. God doesn't need you. God is fully complete in himself. God does not have wants or needs, because God does not, he cannot have a want or a need. He is fully sufficient in and of himself. Our actions, what this means, or our lack, therefore, do not add or take away from God. Our decision to love God or withhold love from God does not change God. It doesn't diminish God or make God less or minimize God in any way. Our decision to worship God does not make God less God or more God. Right? And we talk about today, our desire to be generous or not to God does not change him. Your believing in God or not believing in God does not change God. He is fully sufficient, fully complete in himself. It's interesting because Bill Gates was asked earlier this year in the spring about why he gave $36 billion away. And his response was that it was because of two reasons. He said, number one, it gave him meaning and it was fun. Those are the reasons that he said. I thought it was interesting because what he's saying is that with meaning and purpose, so by giving, it added meaning and purpose to my life. It gave me something I didn't have before. It also added fun to my life, so it enhanced my life with joy and with pleasure. What Bill Gates is essentially saying without realizing it is that it multiplied or added, or it gave me something extra to my life in order to be able to give. So while he may not realize it, part of his generosity was born out of what it provided him, what benefit it provided him. And isn't it the same for us? Right? I mean, wouldn't you and I be shocked if God were to show you how so often your love for people, your affection for people, your generosity to people has invisible tentacles attached to it? I think most of us want to pride ourselves in the fact that we give gifts and we're generous simply because we're generous, but I think oftentimes that's just not true. That underneath it all, we have some kind of an expectation of getting something back in whatever form it takes. It was interesting, I did a Google search this week on being generous. And I put being generous up in the search bar and hit, you know, search. And then it pulled up all these things. It was so interesting. I want to tell you a number of the titles that came up down below. They were, Why Giving Makes You Happy. Being Generous Makes You Feel Better. Generosity Makes You Happier. And then from a medical journal, Be Generous. It's a simple way to stay healthier. So forget about the workouts, forget about the diets, just be generous. You'll feel a lot better. And what's so interesting is as I combed through all of these, the subtle message was almost like, we have to convince you there's some benefit to you before you'll be generous. There's got to be something in this for me in order to be generous. But how many marriages, I thought about, have started this way? How many marriages have started with that you marry for something? How many people have gotten married for money? You hear that all the time, right? How many people married for security in some form or another? How many people married for compassion or for companionship or for fulfillment or for happiness or because of some insecurity in their life or for wanting even a family even, for something? So many people got married to get rather than getting married to give. Getting married to get rather than getting married to give. But this is where we have to start with the generosity of God, because God doesn't give to get. God gives simply to give. Because, right, as I said, there's nothing he can gain in giving. There's nothing that he benefits in giving. So he solely gives for our good, to bless us, to love us, to encourage us, to build us up, to cherish us. And this is utterly amazing to me when you think about this is the story of the Bible. The story of the Bible from Genesis all the way to Revelation, the very end, is a story of a God who gives and gives and gives and get this for no benefit of his own. Think of that. No benefit of his own, the entire story of the Bible. To the very end, I wonder how many of us would have signed up for that deal. To give and give and give. How many of us would have signed up for a marriage where you were told at the very beginning, you will gain no benefit in this marriage over the next 50 years? There'll be no emotional benefit. There'll be no sexual benefit. There'll be no financial benefit. There'll be no benefit whatsoever for the next 50 years. Honestly, I think a lot of us probably might not have gotten married. The creation of our planet, the creation of people who God knew would completely rebel against him, the creation of people he knew would seek their satisfaction something other than him, and yet God pursues hundreds and hundreds of years over and over a people who reject him, all for what? Not for his benefit, but for ours. I think the book that helps us so much is the book of Hosea in the Old Testament. If you're not familiar with Hosea, and I'm not going to spend the whole entire sermon talking about Hosea, but Hosea was a story about God going to a prophet, and right at the beginning, this is what he tells him. Imagine hearing this. The Lord God said to him, go take to yourself an adulterous wife and children of unfaithfulness. Hosea, I want you to go marry, and this is what he did, I want you to go marry a woman who is a prostitute, who sleeps around with men for money. And then, not only that, but when you marry her, she's not going to stop. She will keep doing that. So Hosea, there will be nights during the week where you're going to go to bed at night alone, and you're going to know where your wife is. And I want you to go marry her. And then in a couple chapters later, in Hosea 3:1, God says again to him, go, Hosea, show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another and is an adulteress. Go again to your wife who you are loving her and you are serving her, but to your face she is saying, I do not love you, and I will practically and actively seek other lovers. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine being married to that? And Hosea does this. He goes and shows his love again to his wife, who is every day unfaithful to him. And you've got to ask the question, why in the world would God command someone to go do that? And the answer is the whole entire book of Hosea, which is God saying, this is a picture in a human life of my relationship to you, Israel. This is what you do to me. Every day you run, not after physical lovers, but spiritual lovers. You constantly have your heart attracted to everything but me. And you run after them day after day after day. But what do I do for you? I pursue you. I love you at your worst. I continue to follow you and pursue you and love you despite that. But not only that, God sends his very own son to the cross for you and I. Again, for whose benefit? Ours. To think the cross benefited God none. God got no benefit out of the cross. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine sending your only son to get thorns put in his head and a huge wooden cross on his back and nails in his wrist and all of it for no benefit of you? It is all for the sake of the other. That is the generosity of God. That is the generosity of God. For God so loved the world, John 3:16, that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. God says, I want to be so generous to you, I give you my very Son, not to put a finger in your chest to tell you how you're wrong, but put a hand over you to say, I want to lift you out of the grave. That's how generous I am. About 3 years ago, our staff here at Arbor Heights got to take a staff retreat to this couple that own a home down south in Belfair. Down there, it's on the Hood Canal. And we heard about them from someone in our church, and then through the pastor group I'm part of, we also heard about them as well. And they invited us to come down to their home and spend the weekend down at their home for our staff retreat. And so we went down there, and we pull up to their house, and they live right on the Hood Canal. So beautiful on the water, place, just gorgeous spot. And we walk in the house, in the front door, and you just look out over bay windows and the water, unbelievable view, and the house is gorgeous. It's this brand new home, huge home. It's just amazing. And you walk in, and there's a pool table they have for you. There's TVs that are ready for you to watch movies or to do PowerPoints with your teams up there. They have a fridge that's fully stocked for you, all the drinks you can ever imagine. All the bedrooms are up there, gorgeous. Then you go down below in their main floor, and it's a huge open concept room. And so there's this gorgeous kitchen, there's a gorgeous dining room, and then a whole big area for your meeting space, TV again, all this. Then out in front is the beach. They've got canoes, kayaks for you, shuffleboard, all fun events. And then they have their bedroom tucked over in the corner over here on the side. And so we start the retreat, and that first night we come down, and they have made this amazing meal for us. And then we all sit there and we eat the meal and we have fun talking. And then we get up from the meal and we take our plates and all go over and try and wash our plates. And they're like, no, you guys are not helping. And we're like, well, yeah, let us help. And they're like, no, you guys are here to just enjoy it. So you guys sit at the table and you just talk. And so they washed all of our dishes and put them all away for us. And the next day, same thing. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, the exact same thing. The next day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, the exact same thing. The whole entire weekend, all of it. We end the weekend. And we're standing by the door, and we're getting ready to walk out, and I go over and say to the wife, and I said, hey, listen, we had such an amazing time. This is incredible. You guys bless us tremendously. I said, listen, when you get your bill figured out, send it to our office, and then our office can send you a check for this whole thing. And she goes, no, there's no check. And I said, what do you mean there's no check? And she said, no, this is all free. It's all free. And I said, it's free? And she said, yeah. She said, we have decided in our retirement years, we want to serve churches and pastors' families. And so we invite them to come, and we either buy the food at our own expense. We serve you every single meal. We clean up all the dishes. We stay in our bedroom privately so you can enjoy time with all of your people. And we do it not 1 week out of the year, but about 35 weeks out of the year. That's what we do to serve people. And there's no cost. And my mouth just sat open. And I was like, you're kidding me. And she's like, no, this is our way to serve. And my wife and I got in our car and drove home, and almost the whole ride, that's what we talked about. We're like, can you believe people do that? There was no benefit to them. It cost them everything. It cost them their money. It cost them their personal space. They built that house for other people, not for them. It was all for other people. What a radical demonstration of generosity. What a radical picture of a no strings attached giving. God's generosity is so much different than ours. I thought too of how different it is, and that God loves his enemies. God's generous to the people who despise him. This last summer, we talked about Jonah, if you were here, right? We talked about a guy who totally ran the opposite direction of God. When God said, go north, Jonah went south. When God said, go east, he ran west. He went everything away from God. And what you see in the book of Jonah is over and over and over, God provides. Over and over, a guy who hates God, who runs from God, who wants nothing to do with God. And God over and again says, Jonah, I want to provide for you. In fact, that word provide was used about 6 times in the book of Jonah. I'm going to provide. I'm going to provide. I'm going to provide. I'm going to be generous to you. God provides and is generous to his enemies. This is so different because you never hear about Microsoft donating to Apple, right? I've never heard Honda lavishly giving gifts to Toyota. Or Ford putting on a thank you banquet to Chevy, right? You don't hear about those things because people aren't generous to their enemies, except God is. God's generous to his enemies. God's generosity also, too, is not based on the recipient's deservedness. It's not based upon what people deserve. I think of Zacchaeus, right? The wee little man who Jesus walks into town and meets. And if you don't know about Zacchaeus, he was a chief tax collector. He's this guy who's super wealthy, but his wealth is gained by him working for the government who is oppressing the Jewish people. So he's Jewish, working for the Roman government who's oppressing his own people. And not only that, he's taxing his own people and adding his own personal taxes on top of it to get rich. So can you imagine walking by his house, seeing this really gorgeous home, and you know that it came at the expense of you while you live in a poor home? That is Zacchaeus. We're talking the scum of the earth kind of guy, right? And Jesus comes walking into town, and of all people to go pick to have lunch with, he picks him. And it says in the text, all the people grumbled. Well, yeah, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you be like, why would you go hang out with that guy? He's the worst guy in our whole church. He's the worst guy in our whole community. Why would you go have lunch with him? And Jesus goes and spends time with him, loves him, is generous to a guy who doesn't deserve it, and Zacchaeus comes to Christ. But what's amazing is you see the generosity given to him comes out in his own life. Right afterwards, he goes out in front of everybody, and he says, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. What you may not know is what the law required if you cheated somebody was to pay back the amount of what you stole plus 20%. So Zacchaeus says, not just what I owed you plus 20%, but I'll give you back four times what I took from you. A very generous thing for him to do. And you would say, well, why is he so generous? Because he experienced the generosity of God. Because Jesus was so generous in salvation to a guy like him. See, the wrong idea is God's generous to generous people. God's generous to all people. God's generous to people like you and people like me, people who don't deserve it, people who haven't earned the right. God says that God's generosity is poured out on the just and the unjust, on the kind and the unkind. Right? It doesn't mean, therefore, that's okay to be unkind and continue to experience God's generosity. I think it's more so as I experience his generosity, I would long to be like him, not less like him. I would long to be more like a generous person. And last, I think God's generosity is extravagant. His generosity is extravagant. There was a woman over in Maine, in a place called Ellsworth, Maine, Trisha Murphy. And in December of 2017, Trisha Murphy was working two jobs. She was a single mom who could barely make ends meet. And she was getting close to Christmas time and realized that she did not have enough to provide gifts for her kids. And also, her car had just been towed. And so she worked at this retirement home for part of the day, and then she would go to work at Denny's in the evening. And so she goes to Denny's that night, and she's serving up meals to people, and three guys come walking in, and she serves them their meal. Well, at the end of the meal, she comes and she puts down the bill where they sign and they add everything on there, and the bill came to $38. And they put their card down and signed it and put their tip and all that, and she took it and went back and put in the register, and then came back to the table crying. And I want to pull up on the screen the picture of the receipt, if you can see it. There was a gratuity of $500. $500 they gave her a tip on a $38 meal. And she came back and just weeping and said, you have no idea what this meant to me. You have no idea the timing. My car just got towed, and she tells a story, and the three guys just said, I hope you have a great Christmas, and walked out. God's giving is extravagant. It is extravagant. I want to give you a story or tell you a story just really briefly in the Bible, in the book of John chapter 12, where he talks about an extravagant gift. This is right before Passover, when he goes to the house of Lazarus, Jesus. It says this, John chapter 12, verses 1 through 6. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus arrived at Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected, "Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages." He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As the keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. If you caught that there, he said that what she gave and what she poured on Jesus' feet was worth a year's wages. That was an entire yearly salary. Can you imagine that right now? Can you imagine all of us, no matter what your annual income is, could you imagine taking your annual income and right now doing something with it and pouring it on Jesus' feet? That would be an extravagant gift, I think. An extravagant gift. But the question is, why would Mary do something like that? And it said right at the beginning, it said, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus arrived at Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. 2 months prior to this event is when her brother Lazarus was sick and Jesus came. And not because Jesus had to, not because Jesus owed her something, not because Jesus was obligated, but out of the generosity of God, he raises her brother back from the dead. He raised her brother back from the dead. And a great question would be, if Jesus raised one of your loved ones back from the dead, do you think you would be generous? I think the answer is probably yes. If he brought back someone you loved and cared about, I'm sure your next response would be extravagant generosity, because that's who he is. Why did God not just have one solar system instead of billions? Why didn't God put just a couple 100,000 stars in the sky rather than there's 400 billion stars? Why did he do that? Why not just give us a couple 100,000 that we could see, right? Because he's extravagant. It doesn't mean that, I think this extravagance in our own lives doesn't mean that we go sell our homes and sell our cars and empty our bank accounts and give all to God. Maybe that is what God calls some of us to do, and if it's so, I pray that you would obey him in that. But if that's not what he's calling to do, I think it means that our generosity is costly. Our generosity is costly. Romans 8:32, it says, "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us, how will he not also along with him graciously give us all things?" You've got to understand, God doesn't give leftovers. God doesn't give leftovers. God gives his best. God gives his very best to us. And because he was extravagant for us, we are extravagant for him. We give our very all for him. You know, I really liked when Christy and Carl were talking about how she said, you know, this connection between being generous and having extra money. This idea of, you know, I think we tend to think, I've got to have some surplus money. I've got to have some extra. I've got to take care of all of my needs and everything going on. Then I'm able to be generous. But I want to ask, is that true? Is that true that I have to have extra to be generous? And I want to point your attention to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. And I talked about this last week a little bit, and we'll talk about it next week too. But here Paul talks about the Macedonian churches and about their generosity. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, I want to read you the first 5 verses, and I want you to listen what the ingredients are to being extravagant, okay? He says, "And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich, extravagant generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability, entirely on their own. They urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints." Did you catch that? The two ingredients for being generous: going through a severe trial and extreme poverty. Would you ever have put those together? I wouldn't have. It says, out of the most severe trial they're walking through, and out of extreme poverty, it welled up in what? In extravagant generosity. Extravagant generosity. The question, of course, again, to ask is, why? Why would people live like this? And the answer is given in verse 5. I didn't read that to you. It says, and they did not do as we expected, as I would not expect either, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us in keeping with God's will. They gave themselves first to God's generosity and how God had been generous to them. Then out of that, that's why they were generous like this. No one walking through a time like that would ever think in their heads, this is a perfect time for me to be generous. You only do that when you know the generosity of God. I had a friend who worked for Young Life. If you're not familiar with Young Life, it's a ministry to youth. And he was up in Alaska working for Young Life. And they did their budget as they prepared for the next year, and they were vastly short of what they needed to be able to do ministry in the next year. And he said, so their leadership team got together and prayed and discussed about what they're going to do to make up this massive shortfall that they had. And after a couple weeks of praying, they all came in and they all together talked about it and they made the decision what they were going to do. Guess what they were going to do to fill in the gap to make up next year's budget? They were going to give. They said, why don't we go to every single other Young Life in the area and we will give to them. We will give different amounts to all different ones. That will be our strategy to make up our budget gap. We will be generous. And they gave and gave and gave and gave, and at the end of the next year, they met their budget. It doesn't make sense unless you know a God who's been generous to you. Unless you know a God who did not spare his own son, but gave his son up to die for you. That's when you'll be that kind of generous. That's when you will give in that kind of way. The movie The Jungle Book, if you remember that, that came out in 1960s, I think it was. Baloo the bear in there. If you remember a song that Baloo the bear sang to Mowgli, he said, that I want to be like you, I want to walk like you, I want to talk like you. Remember that song? Blue the bear said, I want to walk like you, talk like you, I want to be like you. Isn't that our prayer to God? Isn't our prayer, I want to be generous like you. I want to be the exact same. I want to give to people like you give. I don't want to give my leftovers. I want to give my best. I don't want to give just when I have a bunch of surplus and extra money. I want to give when I have nothing. I want to have a heart that when I can see a need in front of me, I'm ready and prepared to give, and I can give extravagantly. I do it because my trust isn't in my finances. My trust is in you. You're the one I depend on. And so therefore, I can live a generous life. I want to be like you. I want to talk like you. I want to walk like you, Jesus. Let's pray. Lord God, you've been so unbelievably good to us. And I know sometimes it's even hard really to think about all the ways that you've been generous. But God, as we've sat here this morning, you have provided for us in so many incredible ways. And you are so overwhelmingly generous to us. And God, to think in fact that it brought no benefit to you and it does not bring a benefit to you is staggering. But you still give and you give and you give and you give. Lord, you were even fully complete before you even created this world. You didn't need this world. You didn't need us. And so you created all of it so that you might shower on us your love and your grace and generosity. God, may we be that kind of a church. May people hear in Arbor Heights about this church and say, have you heard of how generous that church is? Have you heard how generous the people in that church are? Those people are incredible givers. God, make us like you. Make us like the generous God you are. Do whatever you've got to do in our lives to make us generous. Take hold of the things that we're holding on to so much and loosen our grip, God, for your glory, for our good. Thank you, Lord, in your precious name. Amen. We're going to take communion this morning, and so I'm going to invite up the ushers, and I want to give you a couple minutes to just spend some time reflecting on how God's been generous to you. big ways, small ways, all different kinds of ways. How's being generous to you? Take some time, and then we'll come back up.